In 1929, the two eldest sons of former President Theodore Roosevelt trekked through the Himalayas searching for the giant panda. Many things went wrong, but they found and shot a panda, winning much acclaim by bringing home its skeleton and pelt. A hunting frenzy followed. Nathalia Holt is a historian and author who explores beautifully intriguing corners of history. She's written about the women spies of ASIO, women space pioneers, women animators in Hollywood. Now she's written The Beast in the Clouds, the Roosevelt brothers' deadly quest to find the mythical giant panda. Nathalia joins us from California. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Nathalia, how could there have been any doubt in the West that pandas existed?
It's hard to imagine, but there was a time when pandas were only hypothesized. They were not clear, and in fact, many scientists believe they might not exist at all. And it started in 1869, when a pelt of a panda was first sent to a museum in France. And so little was known about this animal. Nothing was known about where it lived or what it ate. And so there was really this passion among scientists to find out more. But decades passed, and still no specimen of the panda had been brought for scientists to study. So by the time the Roosevelts left, it had been 60 years of people guessing that this animal existed, but with no real proof. And in fact, even in China, because of the country is so large, many people there also did not know about pandas either. There certainly weren't records in museums or with scientists at the time.
Paintings? Images?
Even that was lacking. Yes, it has a lot to do with where China was at that moment, because you have this vast country that is not easy to get around in. There are not many roads. And so you have the section that pandas living in is quite far from others. And so while it was an animal that people in that region knew about, many people in other parts of China did not know about the panda.
Exploring the world looking for game was a bit of a Roosevelt family tradition.
That's right. Certainly Teddy Roosevelt has this rich history of expeditions and going out to find animals. He was a man that believed strongly in conservation, in protecting wildlife, and he believed that hunting was an essential part of that. And certainly at the time that his two eldest sons, Ted and Kermit, decide to undertake this expedition, they believe very much as their father did, that hunting is the way forward. It's the way to protect animals. And in fact, many scientists at the time believed that shooting animals and that killing endangered species was the way to protect them. And what's interesting is how much that changed with this expedition.
But give us the logic of that. How does shooting animals, endangered species, protect them?
So the thinking at the time was that nature had made its choice, that these animals were doomed. They were not going to survive. There was nothing that humans could do. And so the best thing, scientists believe, was to capture them, to kill them, and then to be able to study them. So at least there would be some record of their existence and that they could be compared to other species. It's hard for us to wrap our brains around it, but this was really the way that many scientists thought in this period of history.
No, there's a rough logic to that. There's a rough logic to it. If you believe that nothing humans could do would save a doomed species, it was good to have one or two in a museum. But did these boys go out on their father's expeditions? Was it he who taught them how to go about hunting for strange, difficult, and lost animals?
Absolutely. He spent many, many hours and days, months, years even with his sons, teaching them about hunting, taking them on expeditions, especially his son Kermit. So Kermit went with him on a trip to Africa. He also went with him on an expedition to the River of Doubt after Teddy Roosevelt lost the 1912 election. And there you see that there is this pattern in Teddy Roosevelt's behavior where after a loss, he often went on an expedition. And that same pattern is repeated in his sons. When they embark on this panda expedition, they're both at a very low point in their lives. They're looking to prove themselves.
Why were they at such a low point? The difficulties of living with a great man father?
Well, certainly, I think there are many advantages to having a famous father, but also many difficulties. And Teddy Roosevelt, while he was an incredibly affectionate father, I mean, he was the kind of dad that would get down on the floor and play with his children, but he could also be hard on them, and especially Kermit. He worried that Kermit would become a weakling. And so what we see is that at this point in 1928, when they're about to undertake this expedition, their father has been dead for a decade. And Ted, so he's the eldest son, has had a great difficulty. He wanted to follow in his father's footsteps and become a politician, but instead he became embroiled in scandal in Washington, D.C., and his political career is over. He will never become a politician. And instead, it is FDR, of course, who goes on with the Roosevelt name. And Kermit as well has had difficulties. His shipping business is faltering. He's having difficulties at home. And so both of them are really ready to leave, much as their father did, and undertake this expedition. And very few people think they will be successful. I mean, you have to remember at this point, there have been so many expeditions to find the panda from the West. So many museums have sent out explorers. No one has come back with the panda. And so certainly nobody thinks that this very small expedition funded by a museum in Chicago and led by the Roosevelts will be the one to be successful.
How did they go about it? What made the difference for their expedition?
Certainly there was a lot of passion among the brothers, but also their group was very well formed. You know, because they were smaller, they were traveling lighter, they were able to go farther than other expeditions. And they decided to go to a part of China that they had been warned many times not to go to. They had been told that savages lived there and that if they went there, they would be killed. And it was a difficult decision to go against all of the knowledge of Westerners that had been given to them. But they decided to enter this part of China where the Yi people live. And of course, what they find are not savages at all, but people whose knowledge of the panda is quite a bit greater than theirs and who help them find the panda,
help us, to their chagrin. Sorry, help us with the map. Where are we in China?
So this is in Western China. And so the Roosevelts end up taking a very long expedition. So they start on the border with India and they end up moving through the Himalayas, across the Tibetan Plateau. They cover 1,000 miles in about 5 months. And it is an incredible trek. They go through so many different areas. They pass through so many cultures. They find themselves in the middle of a civil war that they are very much not prepared for. They have some very close calls, especially in the Himalayas, where they suffer from altitude sickness. They meet with bandits. They lose their food. Many, many things go wrong. And it's certainly a difficult, trying expedition.
Were they incompetent?
Well, you can imagine that travel at that time is not quite the same as today. There aren't roads. You know, they are having to travel on their feet and using mules to carry their expeditions. They were fortunate to be accompanied by guides who were sort of like the Sherpa people in Nepal. And these were men and women who knew the way, who carried the equipment, who made camp. And it's really thanks to them, that, of course, that they were able to find the panda. And they also had some very, very competent members of their expedition. And one of those that I found really interesting to write about is named Taijack Young. And he was young. He was only 18. He was an NYU student whose father was from China and whose mother was from San Francisco. And he had such experience that he was able to bring, not so much in languages as he had promised, but in other ways, he was able to aid the expedition greatly.
How big was the expedition? You make it sound as though it was a small army crossing the Tibetan Plateau.
For the time, it was quite small because you have the two Roosevelts and then you have Taijack Young, who is going as their interpreter and scientist. You have Herbert Stevens, who is a British naturalist. And then you have Sudham Cutting, who is an American naturalist. So with this group, you then have a number of guides, but altogether it's very small for an expedition, certainly much less so than others of the time.
Were they keeping journals?
They were, and that was very helpful to me.
Yes, I'm wondering,
every day,
what have you got?
Yes, in fact, they all kept journals, and this was wonderful for me because I was able to compare the stories between each of them for the events on the trail, and that really let me put in a lot of detail about what happened. I really wanted the reader to feel like they're immersed with them in the Himalayas. And then I also was able to get the unpublished autobiography of Taijack Young, as well as some interviews that he did in the 90s. And so much correspondence between them. It's amazing how well they kept up with each other and how deep their friendships went on, even after the expedition was over.
How glorious to have all of that detail. It must have been thrilling to write.
It was. Oh, so much fun just to really dig into those letters and all of their every part of it was wonderful. But certainly they put in a lot of their personal feelings, what it was like, how they felt, even, you know, what they're wearing, what they're eating, every detail.
What about squabbles and fallings out in the party? Drama?
Yes, a little bit. I suppose you can't have any expedition like this without some drama. Certainly Herbert Stevens gave the Roosevelts a lot of trouble because he tended to be slow. He liked to wander. He liked to explore.
Oh, yes.
Their very first day on the trail, he becomes lost. They can't find him. He just leaves the trail.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
It's this big panic. And eventually he is just slowing down the expedition so much that they end up leaving him behind. Oh, it's terrible. But fortunately, he is able to continue and meet up with them later. And he's able to make a number of really important discoveries on his own.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live, and I am talking to Nathalia Holt about her account of the Roosevelt brothers' discovery of the panda. Now, Nathalia, we are getting close to the animal now. So, were they confident as they trudged on that they would even find an animal? Did they know they were on the right track?
They didn't. They had been searching for so many months in so many landscapes with so many different people that it was very difficult for them to believe they would ever find the animal in the end. And so when they finally find the trail, when they finally find scratches in a tree and they find some scat from a panda, it is this incredible moment because they realize, wow, we're actually here. We're actually going to be able to track down this bear.
But how do they know these are the scats of a bear?
Pandas have very distinct droppings because they only eat bamboo. And so their droppings look very different than other animals. And even in the trees, they use trees to communicate with one another. These are very solitary animals. And so they will rub against their trees and leave hairs. So they could see black and white hairs in the tree along the trail. And it's important to note that at this time, so little was known about the panda that the Roosevelts believed they were meeting an aggressive beast in this bamboo forest. They thought that this would be a cross between a polar bear and a black bear. And they were very much fearful for their lives. I mean, they went in believing that this was the kind of animal they would find.
And I suppose it was the guides who told them, look, bamboo in the scats, scratches on the trees, this is the animal we have always been telling you really does exist.
That's right. The guides were not pleased to finally find a panda because for the people that lived in this area, they knew that pandas were gentle, that these were not aggressive bears. And while they tried to tell the Roosevelts this, they didn't listen. And so it was actually very distressing for the guides because they were hoping they would never find a panda. They didn't want to be on the trail of one at all.
It's a rather American response to the strange and unknown, isn't it? To assume that it's going to be violent and savage and can take your head off. But now, let's get to the point where they finally see the bear. Where was it? How close did they get to it? How long did they let it live?
So they found the panda hiding in a dragon spruce tree in this bamboo forest. They spot a head popping out of the tree. And they wait, and then when the head pops out again, both brothers fire simultaneously. Immediately, they are expecting the bear to begin attacking them. And of course, that is not what happens. But they end up tracking the animal through the woods. They can see that it's bleeding, and they follow it and then finally kill it. And almost immediately they have regrets about their actions because they realize that what the guides were telling them was true. They are the real savages in this land, and they've just killed this animal that is very gentle. And of course, there ends up being unintended consequences from this hunt. So they bring the animal back. It's much fanfare. Everyone is very excited. People are interested in this new animal. They're going to the museum to see it. And immediately you have hunters who now want to find the panda themselves. And the Roosevelts have made that possible because they've shown where the panda are. And not only that, but you also have individuals who want to go and steal cubs to bring back to American zoos. And so that is happening as well. And the Roosevelts realize that they've caused this. They have made all of this happen.
They didn't think to keep at least somewhat secret the actual location of the animal. I mean, that seems basic.
They did not realize what a large game animal the panda would become. It was unexpected for them, the response. Immediately, there was this pandemonium in the U.S. People were very excited about pandas. Suddenly, there were pandas and jewelry and pictures and all of these things. And so it really created this frenzy. And it just took on a life of its own. So certainly, perhaps if the Roosevelts had known what would happen, they might have changed their minds. But it really got out of control. And so you can imagine that at the point where they're sitting in this hotel room, they're with a woman named Ruth Harkness, who's the first woman to have captured a panda cub and brought it back to the U.S. And she's now auctioning it off to see how much she can get for this poor defenseless cub and all of these zoos. And the Roosevelts are aghast. And someone says to them, well, perhaps one day this little animal will be in an exhibit beside your pandas in the museum. And Ted says, I'd sooner stuff my own son. And it's really from this moment on that we see a big change in the Roosevelts, and they end up adapting their lives and making big changes to address this failure of theirs in the Himalayas.
Before we address that, the pandemonium, as of course it has to be called, has lasted to the present day, hasn't it? This extraordinary excitement about these bears, so much so that the Chinese government rents them out to zoos around the world, and Australian prime ministers trek halfway across China to look at one that once lived in the Adelaide Zoo. There is a kind of world fascination with these animals, isn't there?
There is, and that's really thanks to the Roosevelts. They are the ones that introduced the pandas to the West. And you can see why people love them. These are such sweet, gentle animals. These are not animals that attack humans. They're playful. They do cute things and roll down hills and play in the snow. So I think it's very natural that they are so beloved. And it's really thanks to that popularity that you then have all of this wildlife conservation that's happened because of it.
Tell us the link between the two.
So after the Roosevelts came back and they had this regret about what was happening, Kermit decides that he is going to make some changes. And so he ends up becoming president of the Audubon Society, as well as taking another position with the New York Zoological Society.
Now, half tick, explain to Australian listeners the Audubon Society.
Yes, so these are wildlife conservation societies. These are groups that have been established to protect wildlife in the U.S. and in other parts of the world as well. And so when he joins these groups, he immediately takes a very different approach to exploration and to science. He no longer goes out and hunts bears and large mammals. He doesn't also bring them back to zoos. Instead, he goes on a trip to the Galapagos with another member of the expedition, and they work on a breeding program for the Galapagos tortoises. And so he ends up making a big change in that way. But then the other thing he does is he contacts his the people that he knows in China, and he begins working with them to create laws to protect pandas. And this is something that was very unusual at the time. Although there were other endangered species, there weren't laws to protect them. And so China made this very big move in protecting the panda so that people couldn't go there and hunt it, and they could no longer capture the cubs and bring them back to zoos.
When was this?
And so then this took place about 10 years after the expedition. So it certainly took some time for all of this to coordinate. But we see from both of the brothers that they worked really hard on this endeavor in particular. They were persistent in wanting to get the panda protected.
So this was an initiative of the Chiang Kai-shek regime.
That's right.
And it survived into the communist era?
It did. It did. You know, of course, as the communist era progressed, there were certainly fewer connections that were happening. There was less travel that was taking place as well.
Of course.
But these were protections that were kept within the country as well, so it wasn't just foreigners.
Right. But meanwhile, there was a small population of these bears in foreign zoos.
That's right. However, these bears did not do well. Sadly.
Why not?
Unfortunately, zookeepers did not understand how to keep these bears alive. And so pandas struggled in U.S. zoos, and ultimately all of the cubs that were brought to the U.S. ended up dying early. And in fact, that one cub that Ruth Harkness had brought, that first cub, did end up in an exhibit as a cub next to the Roosevelts.
Stuffed and dead.
Yes, and interestingly, she also had a change of heart after seeing what happened, and she ends up taking one of the cubs and bringing it back to China and just never wanting any part of this again.
Is there an estimate of the number of pandas that there are living in the world?
There's about 3,000 pandas. That number tends to go up and down. Right now, the pandas are doing fairly well, which is great news. And these protections for pandas have also encompassed protection for the habitat that they reside in. And so that means that pandas end up protecting many other species that they live alongside.
And what happened to the brothers?
So the brothers end up having a sad story, actually. What we see is that while they had real redemption for the part they played in the panda, they do end up having a sad ending. Both of them sign up for World War II and volunteer early. Ted ends up becoming this incredible war hero. He is the first general to land on the beaches of Normandy. He famously says, "We'll start the war right from here," and was incredibly inspiring. Sadly, he dies of a heart attack shortly thereafter. And Kermit precedes him. He also signed up for World War II early and joined the U.S. Army. He was sent to Alaska, but he struggled with depression and with alcoholism throughout his life. And so he ends up committing suicide. And there's a very sad quote from his brother where he says, "He really died 5 years earlier." And in some ways, I think you can really trace the end of the expedition to the start of his depression, because Kermit says in all of his writings, in all of his letters, he speaks about how it's in the wilds where men show you who they really are, and it's where he felt most comfortable. It's something he says many times, that being there with his brother was a wonderful moment for him, a real highlight of his life. And after that, he and his brother end up not getting along, struggling with their communication. And it's a very sad end for Kermit.
I wonder how much the story of the panda is affected by the swirl of publicity that must have affected the lives of anybody called Roosevelt. There was another Roosevelt president in the White House by this time, only a very distant relation, I believe. But these boys lived in and took their expedition through this kind of instant world of publicity. I wonder what it would all have been like if it was a Mr. Smith and a Mr. Jones who took a few guides across the Himalayas and found a panda, just ordinary folk.
It's such a good point, because there are so many expeditions like that. So most large mammals that were discovered and were described by scientists were found by explorers whose names we don't remember, who don't have any animals named after them, and whose stories have really just been lost to history. It's only because they are the Roosevelts that so much has been documented about this expedition. But I think that swirl of publicity that you're talking about certainly has a large impact.
Does the name Kermit live on as a comic book figure?
Do you mean Kermit the Frog?
I do.
Is
mean,
that what you mean?
I do mean Kermit the Frog. And I wonder, I wonder if Kermit is named after Kermit. It's not a common name.
It's not a common name. I don't know. And that's such a good question. I really am curious myself. I wish I knew the answer.
If you find out, will you let us know? And we'll tell the listeners of Late Night Live, because I think they'd be on the edges of their chairs at the moment as well, wanting to know if that was the survival of this really uncomfortable and bizarre Christian name, Kermit.
I definitely will.
Okay, thank you. We'll hold you to that. I have to ask you, all these books you've written about the role, the particular role of women, what was it like to write a book about the particular role of men?
I enjoy writing about people in history who have not gotten their due. So many of them are women. And I'm sure there'll be more books about women in my future. But it was really something to be able to delve into these stories and to be able to talk about two men and many others on this expedition who I feel haven't gotten their due as well, and who, by elucidating this part of history, it tells us a lot about conservation, about biology, and about preserving endangered species today.
And a last question before I let you go. Can we go to that museum in Chicago and see that panda still?
Yes, you can see the pandas there, and as well as some
other... Which museum?
It is the Field Museum in Chicago.
Okay, we'll direct our listeners there as well. Next time in Chicago, that spectacular city, go and look at the panda. Thank you very much, Nathalia. We've enjoyed this a lot. I've been speaking to Nathalia Holt, whose book, The Beast in the Clouds, The Roosevelt Brothers' Deadly Quest to Find the Mythical Giant Panda, is published by Simon & Schuster.